Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. There was a time when donning blackface was part of mainstream entertainment accepted by a white-dominated culture. For example, here's jazz singer Al Jolson in blackface in his Mammy Minstrel Show back in 1927.
Mammy, Mammy, I'd walk a million miles for one of your smiles on my Mammy.
But cultural standards change, even if lots of folks are slow to catch on. The controversy swirling around Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and State Attorney General Mark Herring, who've both admitted to blacking up their faces when they were younger, are two cases in point. But they're not exceptional. You'd think that we should know by now how offensive blackface is, but it still shows up in modern-day pop culture. Here are some recent examples, beginning with comedian Jimmy Fallon.
To be a millionaire, and guess what? Not a lot of black folks on the show.
Right.
Not a lot of black folks on the show. Know why? Because black folks don't like to answer questions.
You gotta ease on down, ease on down the road.
I'm gonna stop that right now.
This is worse than when you wore your shorts to work.
Sometime at night, call below, look up in sky, and say, what the hell going on up there?
I ain't too crazy about the color of the house, but that's a whole other thing.
The White House.
Yeah.
I made us some crab apples for dessert now, yeah? Hey, yeah! Ha!
That audio montage included Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Jane Krakowski, Billy Crystal, and Robert Downey Jr., all of whom donned blackface, sometimes for laughs, sometimes to make a point about racism. But all this raises a couple of questions we want to explore today. Given its painful racial history, why is blackface still happening, still a source of explosive political controversy in Virginia? And while we're asking these questions, is it ever acceptable? Are all instances of blackface alike? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Joining us in the studio to talk about all this is Michael Curry. He's a former president of the Boston NAACP and a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Michael, it's always great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.
Also joining us by phone is the Reverend Mariama White Hammond of the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Mariama, good to have you. Really appreciate it.
Good to be here.
So let me start with you, Michael Curry, if I can. Where does this begin? I mean, does white America sort of need a kind of lesson 101 on the history of what's going on here in terms of blackface?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's not necessarily a history of blackface. It's a history of racism in this country. And I think that there's an unconsciousness for most. I think it's it's an unwillingness to embrace our history. And for others, they know and they still will wear blackface or perpetuate racism. But I think it's a conversation that takes us from the mid-1800s with minstrel shows and the perpetuation of an image of African Americans as lazy, as shiftless, as oversexual, as men who will attack white women, carrying through throughout the rest of that century in the 1915 with Birth of a Nation and the revival of the Ku Klux Klan. It's about power. It's about if you can dehumanize a people, you can do almost anything to them. You can pass Jim Crow laws. You can shoot them on the street. You can hang them. And unfortunately, America doesn't seem to embrace that history.
Mm. Reverend White Hammond, what are you thinking about, talking about in these days since this whole thing has blown up in Virginia? Tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, again, it's sad, but I think, you know, I would agree a lot with Michael. It's you can't look at it outside of the context of you know, where America has come from and where we are. I do think there are some ways in which we're engaging in some level of nuance in terms of there's some things that I do not, you know, sort of can't understand. Not quite clear why it's ever funny or amusing to be the KKK. So there's that piece. You know, and so I think looking at the historical realities of the two huge issues with blackface, first of all, is sort of making fun of the deep pain that African Americans have experienced in this country. And then the second piece is sort of the tendency to pretend like everything is great and we're just so happy and all of these pieces. And so I think, you know, obviously they're two sides of the same coin. When you're engaging around that piece, I'm not really clear. But there is this next question of, is it ever appropriate for a white person to portray themselves as a black person? And I think, you know, it is dicey no matter what.
And I wanted to ask you about that and hold that thought, Mariama, because I just, first of all, I want to encourage our listeners to call in here. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you make of the blackface scandal plaguing Virginia right now? What do you think? Should Governor Ralph Northam step down for his offensive yearbook photo? What about Attorney General Mark Herring, who used blackface when dressing up as a rapper back when he was 19? Are all these instances of blackface alike, or are they some, so to speak, gray areas? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And, Mariam, I want to sort of come back to this thought that you put on the table. And I was reading a piece in The Atlantic. It's there right now by John McWhorter. He's an African-American scholar at Columbia.
Oh, I'm familiar with him.
Right. So he puts this piece together that begins with this headline, "Are all instances of blackface alike?" And I'll just read the first graph because it raises an interesting issue. Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring blacked up his face in 1980 when dressing as Curtis Blow. Herring admitted what he did and apologized. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam's yearbook page contains a photo of a man in blackface next to someone dressed as a Klansman. Northam admitted that he was one of them, apologized, then said perhaps he wasn't in the photograph at all. So his point is, two different cases here. Should they be treated alike or not? In other words, are all instances of this kind of a thing, does it come down to the same offense in your view?
You know, I think it's, I would say, first of all, it's generally unadvisable, period.
Yeah.
But I do sort of see three cases that I would take somewhat differently. So one is anybody who is making light of the pain and suffering that black people have suffered from slavery to this point, I feel like that's just unacceptable, period. So that's one piece. And then, as Michael mentioned, there are people who are sort of ignorant to the history of it. The Curtis Blow incident I don't know how he could have been totally ignorant of the history, but I think in this instance, you have someone who is trying to play a character and attempting to get close to that character. Again, not a good idea. Not helpful in terms of the historical context. But I would say I see it a little bit differently than lining up with a friend who's in a KKK costume.
Got it. Yeah.
And then you have people who, you know, are trying to make social commentary, in which case, you know, there was an example, I think, in 30 Rock of, you know, a black man dressing up as a white woman dressing up as a black man, and them trying to understand the differences in what the two experience. I think that is actually much more around trying to have a deeper conversation and understanding about the dynamics of race and gender in this country. And then, again, I'm not sure I think it's like the most advisable things. It's dicey territory. But if people are really actually trying to get to a better level of understanding and authentic dialogue that recognizes the tensions and realities, I take that very differently. So
yeah.
I think, you know, I do think it's dangerous. If you are not being really thoughtful, then just don't do it.
Right. Michael Curry, what's your view on that? If there are gradations of this at all?
So I think one is many of us African-Americans, people of color, because I always use the example of the white kid in the movie Sixth Sense when he says, "I see dead people," is that some of us are conscious about racism and we see it when most of us don't want to see it. I think the reality is there are Democrats, Republicans, and independents that we worry about whether they're racist. And sometimes it spills out in a joke at the work meeting, or mm-hmm. it could be the yearbook photo that you didn't know about. There is no doubt that the governor knew about that yearbook photo. I'm sure if he did not see it, people called him about it. And he's standing next to a Ku Klux Klan, a person dressed as a Ku Klux Klan member. That's disturbing. That was disturbing in the 1980s. That's disturbing today. And he's missing two of the key elements. One is honesty and then contrition. I don't get the honesty. So that's missing. And initially, there's a question about whether he was really contrite about what he did. So there's a challenge for this governor. I think that's why most folks call for his resignation.
So let me ask you this, and I want to just put this on the table because I think it's fair to say that some people would look at something like what happened in Virginia and say, these were young folks. The governor, I guess, was in medical school. The attorney general was in college. He was, let's talk about the attorney general when he did blackface to dress up as Curtis Blow. He was 19. Youthful indiscretion.
Yeah, I think it's a cop-out. All right, I think when you're, and it's, again, privilege and power. If you're a white male or even a white woman, but particularly white male, then you always want to excuse it and say, well, it was the times. In 1830s, in 1840s and 50s, people knew this was the wrong thing. That's why you had filmmakers coming, and later in that century, Oscar Michaud trying to create an alternative image in the 1900s around black people, and that we were not shiftless and dirty and over-sexualized. There's a need to have a conversation where people can let go of that privilege and that notion that, okay, this is about overly political correctness. No, it's about being wrong. Mm-hmm. It's about history. It's about a legacy of abuse and neglect and mistreatment of people of color. If we can get to that, then we can get to the change that's necessary. The governor, in my case, in that example, I think is a horrible example where he is not fit to serve in office. There are other examples, as the Reverend pointed out, where there's a conversation. It's about social commentary. It's about these critiques of race in our society. And even people try to compare sort of the white chicks with the brothers who played in whiteface. There is a different scenario. This is about privilege and power and a long history in this country of abusing that power and using racial images to do that.
We've got a lot of people who want to get in on this conversation, so let's go to Jan. He's calling from Bellingham. Jan, you're on the air. It's good to have you. What's on your mind?
Well, a couple of things. Actually, while I was waiting, I realized I had read the book Black Like Me a long time ago, a really long time ago. And in that case, I guess there was a good purpose to it, but maybe as a white person, I'm, you know, not seeing how that might have come across to black people. And along the same lines, like if a school kid wants to dress up as Martin Luther King for a holiday or a celebration and were to wear blackface to do it, but is being respectful, is that still like a disrespectful, hurtful thing to do?
Jan, okay, thanks for the question. Let me come to you, Mariama White-Hammond, Reverend White-Hammond. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think that the reality is there's a history behind this.
Yeah.
And I think if a child came to me and said that, I would say, let's look at this history and let's stay away from that. I know you want to honor Dr. King, but let's figure out how you do that without putting, you know, blackness on your face.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, so I think that there's nothing wrong with people wanting to honor other people. But I think that I would say to that child, let's stay away from this because it has a history that is problematic.
That makes sense. And Michael Curry, I mean, I hear what Jan's getting at. She seems to be talking about intention. I mean, it obviously wouldn't be the intention of that child to do something disrespectful, but that child needs to be taught why putting on blackface would mean something very different than what that child was intended.
Yeah, it's really about racial sensitivity. And if people can embrace that, that's a good thing. So I always use the example in diversity trainings, which I used to do at a company here years ago. We would show the young kid who wanted to show what was essentially a swastika, but he was arguing was the ancient Byzantine symbol and not the hate symbol that was later used in Nazi Germany. And there was a big protest against him showing the symbol. It took him raising his consciousness to say, I get it. For the people who had to deal with the loss of life during Nazi Germany and the Holocaust, this means something else to them. Let me remove the art.
Yeah.
And even though I think I was making a good point, it hurts to have people see that. So I think if people can tap into that sensitive side of themselves that says, hey, there's a history to that, and therefore it's not in the best interest of our communication, of our collective responsibility to have a conversation, for me to show this symbol, wear blackface. If you want to play Dr. King, put on the mustache, wear the clothes. You don't need the blackface.
Let's go to Ellen, who's calling from Hyannis. Ellen, it's good to have you on the show. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just listening to Dr. Cornel West the other day talk about this, and he was saying that we should try to avoid sort of fetishizing particular things like blackface, like the governor should be held accountable, but it can also be a distraction from looking at institutional racism and how it is perpetuated in all these other areas of our culture and our economic life. And he also talked a lot about sort of that this doesn't have to be the end of the story for the governor, that there is kind of redemption and understanding, and I thought it was a very...
Ellen, I really appreciate two good points. Michael Curry, you're nodding your head, so I want to go to you first.
Yeah, for those of us who try to facilitate this conversation, racism, you know, I and many others say all the time that we tend to gravitate to the egregious, the death examples of racism, the dragging a man behind the truck, the hanging someone from a tree, the blatant use of the N-word. And all those require our attention, and there's a lesson to be learned in all that. But there's a real conversation that we do not want to have. It's the little kid from Sixth Sense who says, I see dead people. That there's a challenge to come from under the covers and deal with the institutional racism, the attitudes that prevent people from getting hired, that makes doctors treat patients differently, that makes police officers pull a gun and pull the trigger sooner, that prevents people from renting or selling their homes. That's the broader conversation that we have yet to have.
Mm. Mariama White-Hammond, I want to get you to pick up on the other point that the caller made, this idea that... you know, people need to be held to account when they do this. I mean, this is what we're seeing in Virginia in a big way. But what about the possibility of redemption here in dealing with these folks who have made these mistakes? Do we need to talk about the possibility of redemption and forgiveness, or what's your view on that?
So, you know, I'm a minister, so of course I'm going to always say that there's space for forgiveness, but that doesn't mean you get to remain in the position that you're in.
I see.
So do I think he should be shunned and no one should talk to him? And absolutely not. I think there should be space for him to enter a dialogue. Whether or not he's in the place to lead that dialogue is a totally different question. I think, you know, we can create a lot of space, but that doesn't mean that there should be no accountability. I think there can be accountability and grace at the same time. And I think that given the way that the governor has handled the situation, would you trust him to lead a conversation? Like, how does he sit, you know, in a leadership position in that conversation? I think at this point it's clear that he definitely needs to be in that conversation, but probably first as a listener, then doing some of his own work. And so that's where I think, yes, I do believe in forgiveness and redemption, but I don't think you always get to remain at the top while you're doing that
right
work.
No, it's a good point, and I completely get it. And I got to say, some of the governor's comments in the wake of this were just sort of made your jaw drop.
Bizarre.
I mean, bizarre. I mean, he was about to do Michael Jackson's moonwalk until his wife said, yeah, honey, maybe not a good idea here,
exactly.
Or words to that effect. Let's go to Victor from Roxbury. Victor, you're on the air. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me. So first off, I think Michael is making some amazing points, but to his points, James Baldwin said this at a conference in the West Indies. He was in a conference there meeting with other black leaders, and this is what he said. He said that white women had black men castrated and killed, knowing them to be their lovers. White men had black children killed, knowing them to be their sons. So let's look at all the evidence, evidence that people say all the time. We are, not to say we're tired of hearing it, but that we hear all the time, right, about institutional racism, about racism in general. We can have all the facts in the world, but the fact of the matter is real, is that white America especially is not willing to look at it. Right? They're not willing to look at the history. They're not willing to look.
Victor, I'm going to jump in. Victor, I'm going to jump in only because your line is sort of fading on us. But I take your point, and it's a good one. And Michael Curry, I mean, just sort of pick that up. But I mean, this idea that white America needs to get serious and sort of look at the history here.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's funny. As when I was president of NAACP, I used to say to myself, wouldn't it be great if I could go meet with mayors, police commissioners, fire chiefs, corporate CEOs, and they have a baseline understanding of history and racism? Mm. then we could at least progress and make some progress in the areas that we wanted to. But the problem is you're always entering these conversations with a deficit. They don't understand the taint of race in this country and the impact that it's had on generations of African-Americans and others in the United States. If we had a basic understanding of that, we can get a lot further with all the areas that we care about, healthcare, housing, education. We'd like to believe we just got here by spontaneous combustion and where people are poor, people are dying of diseases, people get shot. No, there's a history behind it. I think to that gentleman's point, we got to start from the beginning. This is the 400-year anniversary of the first arrival of slavery in this country in Virginia, which the governor is ignorant to because he called them indentured servants. The difference between indentured servants and slaves is indentured servants had a period of time they had to serve. Africans coming here as slaves did not have a period of time. They were slaves.
So, Reverend Mariama Whiteham, I want to give you the last word. We just have like 10 seconds left,
yeah.
But I've really appreciated you being here. Last thoughts before we close this really important conversation.
So, yeah, so I'm glad we're having the conversation. I really hope it doesn't end here. What's frustrating to me is that we have these pop-up conversations, and then as soon as it's blown past, you know, it quiets again.
Hmm.
And what I think that Michael is calling for, some of the callers, we need a sustained conversation that goes deep because that's the only way we're going to get to another place in this country.
Well, I'm into that. We'll keep that conversation going. And it sounds like, Michael, also you're referring to the need for a close study of our history to understand it, to embrace it. Thank you both. Michael Curry, former president of the Boston NAACP, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And the Reverend Mariama Whiteham, pastor at New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Reverend Whiteham, thank you so much.
Good to be here.
Listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call, but give it a try. 617-917-4717.